All right. And if you guys, if, do you want to move over a little bit and replace that kneeling chair with a chair? Because I'm going to come sit over there. All right, welcome everyone. Go around and greet the people on Zoom, and then the people in the Zendo will introduce themselves. So I'll start with Betty, Tyler, Susan, Mark, Jim, Joshua, Gathel, Drew, Ellen, Dave Q, Chris, Paul, Alice, Mick, Yeshitsuki, Lori, Marv, Zach, Mike, Tracy, Simone, Sabrina, and Ruth Ann, and in the Zendo, Shoketsu, Walt,
Nicholas,
Jinryu,
Erica,
Dennis,
Evan,
Judith, Andrew, and Domio. All right. Let's see. In terms of, that's fine. Just make another chair happen over there somewhere. Doesn't matter. We can go a little further over that way too. Okay. In terms of announcements, there is a one-day retreat coming up. Seems like we just had one, but hey, you know, they're nice. April 16th, I believe. The 17th is our Vesak Festival. That's on Sunday. It's in the place of chanting service. Those of you who are local, we could still use some volunteers to come and decorate the baby Buddha's bower. He has a little, like, canopy over him that we decorate with spring flowers, and then he's in a little bowl of sweet tea, and we pour, we have a ladle, and we pour sweet tea over his head as part of the festival of the Buddha's birth. So, you know, come and witness on Zoom, or come in person and bring flowers. Anything else that any questions about anything coming up, or, oh, I guess, just in the interest, because I realize some people don't read email or, you know, the email newsletters, we do have, we have a couple different groups going on Thursday evenings, well, kind of after, late afternoon Pacific time. There is a podcast discussion group that meets on this Zoom channel. It's a little earlier in the day, though, than our Tuesday program, so that's good for people who are in farther east time zones, and they are studying the precepts right now along with us. There is also a grief support group, grief as love in the face of loss, group that Paula is going to be hosting starting April 11th, and that'll meet for an hour. I think it's 5:30 to 6:30 Pacific, and then, you know, so it's not too late for the Eastern time zone, anywhere in between.
Domio, can you mention what day of the week that is? I know you said the 11th.
Yes, sorry, that's a Monday. So that's going to happen on Mondays, and you know, it's for people, you know, actively practicing with grief. In particular, what Paula found was that, because she just lost her husband last June, that many grief support groups are of a different, they're theistic, they have a different thrust to them. Whereas you know, to be able to really speak about this in terms of Zen practice and put it in Zen terms is something that's that can be really valuable. So that's what folks will be doing. And you, you know, if you are interested in that, in our newsletter, there's her emails in the newsletter to contact her, but you can always contact me and let me know that you want to know more. And I think also I should guess I should mention Sunday we will have a Sangha member talk by James. And he, what is he, he's calling all, he's using the Sound of Music song. He's going to sing the song, but like the song, all of my, these are a few of my favorite things. And so he's going to share some of his favorite Zen passages and teachings that have been significant for him. But he also wants other people to bring their, some of their favorite things to share. So heads up about that. There'll be, that'll be in the newsletter. That'll come out Friday morning, but I give you a heads up about that now. All right, then I will turn it over to Ellen for tonight's precept class. And Ellen, hold on while I leave audio on this computer and join it on the other one. Okay, we're good to go.
All right, we can we hear me? All the way from the East Coast? Hi, everybody. So tonight we're going to be talking about the second precept, do not steal, and the various ways that is expressed and interpreted and understood in Buddhist teachings and Zen. But I wanted to start off with a couple of anecdotes, if you don't mind, that come from my career, I don't know if it's career actually, as a bookseller, which, as you can imagine, I witness a fair amount of theft. Not so much now, but it seems like it was worse back when I started. And my first job was at Crown Books in Washington, D.C. I was in college. It was my last year of college. In 1989. It was actually the week I started was the week that the Satanic Verses was published. Does anybody remember that? The Fuhrer? Yeah. Okay, so that happened. I started my job and suddenly I'm working in a bookstore that has security guards and so forth because there was sort of the idea that people would come in and take this thing or some trouble would happen. But before I was hired, I guess probably was part of their onboarding process. I was given a test, an inventory, some sort of personality or morality inventory. You might have experience with this if you've worked in retail, I guess, especially. And one of the questions went something like this. Everyone steals sometimes, right? In my memory, that's exactly how it was phrased. Everyone steals sometimes, right? So what are you supposed to do with that question? You know, in its phrasing, the phrasing is rather leading. Are the writers of the test suggesting that stealing is a common function of human nature and therefore expected? Or is the question sort of a trick? If you answered yes, is your resume automatically tossed in the circular file? And if you answered an indignant, absolutely not, you know, what then? I don't actually remember what my answer was, but I got the job. And 33 years of bookselling later, here I am. And I also wanted to mention one other incident, the famous incident, when I worked at a bookstore in Greenwich Village throughout the 90s, that's where I was, bookstore called Three Lies and Company, still there. As you can imagine, being in the village, we had a lot of celebrities there all the time. You get kind of used to it. It's great, fun. But one time around the holidays, which would be the only time when we would have sort of a gift Bible available, and someone came in and stole the Bible, ran down 10th Street. And who happened to be at the store at that moment? A frequent customer, John Waters, the director. And he had a fantastic response, which was, he's not just going to jail, he's going to hell. So So I always have that in my head. I always have John Waters' voice in my head about that particular episode. Okay, so there's my anecdotes. Okay, so let's hold on to that question though. Everyone steals sometimes, right? Maybe we can use that as sort of the basis of conversation, of a discussion. I don't know if we'll have time for breakout groups or what on that. That would be great, actually, if we could do that. But let's consider, as we did with not killing, about our own personal definitions of stealing, its moral or karmic consequences. And as with not killing, like we discussed last week, there are so many layers and there are so many subtleties. And there are also, metaphors that are maybe different than our everyday concepts of what stealing is. So in preparation for this discussion, I was, of course, reading Rosetto book. I'll be quoting from this, and also Being Upright by Reb Anderson, which is something that I refer to constantly. I also was rereading parts of You Are Still Here, the volume of Kjetil Karlsen's teachings, and also some Thich Nhat Hanh for good measure. So I guess I'll start with Karlsen. He said that the precepts are the link between the inner aspiration, the mind that seeks, and its expression in our daily lives. They describe enlightened action. So this is the second precept we're talking about, do not steal. I think the literal translation in Pali is, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. And the title of Rosetto's chapter on the precept is, I take up the way of taking only what is freely given and giving freely of all that I can, which is a mouthful, but it kind of says it all. Some teachers, it seems, prefer sort of turning it all around or inverting it and just as a positive phrasing, to practice generosity. Instead of thinking, what may I not take, we think, what may I give? And maybe that's kind of like embracing the goal of giving back to the universe more than we take. But it can also be thought of as the expression of the perfection of giving. I've read that term a couple of times. And if you're cultivating that, then it requires a habit of generosity. Reb Anderson. So everybody has a, of the things that I've been reading on the precept. Of course, everybody has a slightly different take. Anderson focuses a lot on delusion as the cause of stealing. He says, precept of not, by the way, if you have the book, this is chapter 14, page 100 in Being Upright. The precept of not stealing, or as we express it in the Bodhisattva initiation ceremony, not taking what is not given, immediately follows and extends the precept of not killing. Stealing is extremely harmful to our well-being, but if we are deluded, then it is quite natural and unavoidable that we steal. When we are deluded, stealing cannot be stopped. When we awaken, we cannot be forced to steal. Not stealing is a way of living that naturally arises from our Buddha nature. And he goes on to say that our fundamental human delusion is the belief that mind and object are really separate, and that self and other have independent existence. So yeah, as I said, he's focusing on delusion being a kind of primary concept here, and which I think is sort of an interesting take on it too. So while shoplifting and theft and robbery are probably the most, like what we think of most commonly, we associate with stealing. We're not only talking about stealing physical objects or disrespecting other people's property. There are less concrete forms described by idioms and metaphors. We steal time. We steal a glance. We steal a kiss. That last one's probably like though maybe it was a charming term when it was coined. It's like problematic now. You don't do that without consent. But then, of course, we have a sizable percentage of the American public right now who have been led to believe that the last presidential election was stolen. So there's a lot of, throwing that word around. On page, let's see, 109 of the Rosetto book, her, chapter 9 in her book is about this precept. She says, "109, there it is." Okay. Okay, let us begin by taking a look at the many different ways we take what is not freely given and exploring our beliefs about what we think we don't have, what we think we should have, and what we have. Sometimes the first half of this precept is worded as a prohibition against stealing, but the core of this precept goes deeper than just taking what is not ours to take. It invites us to consider deeply what and how we ask or don't ask for whatever it is we want or need. It invites us to consider how we give or don't offer what we are capable of giving. And it then leads us into a deeper inquiry into notions of lacking and deserving. Beliefs that we require and deserve to have more than what we do have. And she goes on to talk about like cheating and larceny and other forms of stealing that share borders with lying. And I find that a really interesting idea too. That the sort of adjacent that stealing is adjacent to lying, just like it's adjacent to killing. She says at a more subtle level, the precept directs us to the door marked getting something. It encourages us to meet the beliefs, assumptions, and habitual thought patterns behind that door that fuel our insistence on getting what we want. It leads us to uncovering the mind of attainment. And quite often, what fuels this need for attainment is the belief of not enoughness, insufficiency, lack. And I, for me, and I know for Domio, definitely the conversation, it always in my mind goes to how we think about natural resources too. What are we taking more than our share? I'm always on my boys, my teenage boys, for like leaving the tap running full blast when they're brushing their teeth or washing their hands, like, shh, like no thought. So to me that, we're not stealing water. The water is there for us, but where is that line of taking more than you need of natural resources? And then, sort of indulging habits that cause more greenhouse gases to be emitted and, or like, using new printer paper rather than recycling, or are we taking more than our fair share? And does that feel like a victimless crime? In addition, someone said to me, I don't know when this was, a couple of years ago, that they, and I was, I admit a little bit surprised that they would frequently take things from Target. Because they felt that taking things from Target, from a big corporation, wasn't quite as bad as taking them from a small store. So I don't agree with that in any way, but it's amazing the things that people can sort of justify, I guess. Okay, so internalizing the second precept, we're called upon to think about the ways that taking more than you need might deprive someone else. And it's not always obvious. But the most vivid recent example for all of us is, the beginning of the pandemic when folks were hoarding toilet paper, and the shelves were absolutely bare as a result. So, if your supermarket laid down the law and said only one roll per household or whatever, great, but I know that mine didn't, and people were just swooping in and taking what was there. So the shelves were bare for months and months. So that's, sort of an example that's, while it's not a law and the precepts are not laws, it's not illegal. It's just sort of, probably agree that hoarding in that way, result in people who need these materials not getting them. So then it feels unethical. And on that note, to practice the I saw an article online, I have to re-find it, but it was called Enlightened Ethics. To practice the precepts is to get beyond thinking about what the rules permit us to do. The practice is more challenging than just following rules. When we pay close attention, we realize that we fail a lot. But this is how we learn and how we cultivate enlightenment. The precepts, or this precept is associated with right action, part of the Eightfold Path. And it's, that's the path, that's the discipline taught by the Buddha to guide us to enlightenment and liberation. So in this case, it's an action or actions that we refrain from, frequently phrased that way. Okay, so wait one sec here. Okay, so let me go back to Reb Anderson one sec for 1 minute here. I'm always going back to Reb Anderson. Okay, and so on page 107 of Being Upright, under the suchness of mind and objects, so I invite you to consider that term also, the suchness of mind and objects. And this is where he's extending on it being, an extension of the first precept, not killing. So the great Bodhisattva precept of not stealing continues and extends the practice of the first grave precept, not killing. The first grave precept is ultimately an appreciation of the oneness of all life and a meditation on the dependent co-arising of life and death. The ultimate meaning of the second grave precept is realized by clearly observing the suchness of mind and its objects. What is the suchness of mind and objects? It is the interdependence of mind and objects. Objects are anything in the entire universe of experience, not only material objects, but thoughts, feelings, and memories as well. In this context, mind is consciousness, which dependently arises together with objects. Thus, mind and objects have no independent existence. They exist only codependently and cooperatively. And before we go into a discussion on this, I just wanted to also say, like, Rosetta, because I appreciate her style, I guess you would say, so much, in that she always gives us a sort of practice at the end of each chapter, which I really like. But I wanted to talk first about this point that she makes between wanting and needing. This is on my mind all the time. Every day, I consider myself sort of like minimalist. I try to live as simply as I can. I'm trying to transmit that to my voice. So that's where the line is. Where is the line between wanting and needing? And it can be hard to make that clear to kids. They think they need something. We're constantly being marketed to online. If you participate in social media at all, I mean, the extent to which, and I resent it, I have to admit, that we're being marketed to, it's everywhere. You can't escape it when you're looking at a feed on social media. So I just wonder about the ways that affects our psyche in terms of, the ideas of wanting and needing. But I like the way that she phrases it. This is an important point, the difference between wanting and needing. Sometimes these words are used carelessly. We might say, I need you to give me a space in line. What we really mean is, I want you to give me a space in line. Sometimes we need, sometimes we just want or would like. Let's not confuse the two. Each has its place under specific conditions. When we know the difference, then we are free to take and free to give. But when not used in ways that fit the situation, can my unnecessary need actually limit another's legitimate need, limiting her option to say no or yes or maybe? And then finally, so her practice on this chapter is to begin to notice the obvious and subtle ways in which you take what is not yours to take. My cat just knocked over all the books on the shelf there. Did you see? Was that on the screen? Did you see that? Yeah. Take what is not yours to take, or ways in which you hold back from giving freely all that you can. Include not just material items, but also time, attention, and so forth. You may notice only obvious things in the beginning. It can take a while to catch some of the subtleties. So getting back to that idea of everyone steals sometimes, right? I was thinking that we could use that old chestnut as a basis for discussion. Give some examples of why you think that that is true or not true. Should we, I don't know, Tyler, should we do breakout rooms for this? Or Donya, what do you think? Or should we just do it as a raise your hand situation? What are the thoughts?
I don't know. Raise the hand situation seemed to work pretty well last week.
Okay. That's good, because then we get everybody's, yeah.
Just keep an eye out for raised hands on Zoom, and then if there's somebody in the Zendo here, they'll come sit in this chair and we will raise the Zendo hand so you can see that somebody wants to say something.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So does anybody want to start or have an example? What's the first thing that comes to your mind when I say everyone steals sometimes, don't they? Or right? Here comes Junior West here. Hi.
Great. You look great too.
Yes.
So what comes to mind, well, I would have answered that question no, because I would have wanted the job, and I don't want them to think, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think the answer might be yes. Yeah, particularly in the context of the precepts, because our precepts can apply to so many different levels of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that came to my mind, because this hurts me a little bit, which is kind of dumb, is when people are out to dinner. It especially hurts me when someone's walking their dog and they're on the phone.
Yeah.
You are stealing precious time away from that creature who wants to be with you, and stealing time away from our partner or our families when you're at a particular point in the day where it's about everybody, it's about us. And the technology gets in the way of that. And so I look upon that as stealing time. I think stealing time is a big deal. So, thanks.
I agree. Stealing time is, you know, sort of number one. I'm going to make a little list of these, by the way, while we're talking. You know, the ways that we steal time. So everybody's on their phone all the time now. You know, when you're on a public transportation or just waiting somewhere, like it feels like 100% of the people are sitting there on their phone doing something. No, I'm not judging it. It's just the way it is. But when it's at the expense of, you know, of the idea of time with or quality time with your kids or your pets or whatever, yeah, I definitely have that thought too, Jinryu. Yeah. Tracy, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that when you say the phrase, everyone steals sometimes, right? It's actually, I think, posing two different questions. One is being whether it's condoned that everyone steals. And then the second one is the literal piece. Does everyone steal sometimes? And so I think when I break it down, you know, does everyone steal, right? Well, everyone has. Everyone, I highly doubt there's a single person here that says they've never stolen anything. And we will all continue to steal in some form, whether intentionally or unintentionally, the rest of our lives. But on the other hand, should that be condoned? No. So if I were answering that application, I wouldn't know what to put. Because there's definitely two sides of that coin. That's all.
Yep. My partner Kevin had to take a similar test. I think he was, can't remember what the job was for, but it had to do with like what kind of person were you if you liked watching horror movies. Yeah, he was a video editor and stuff. So yeah, they didn't want to hire someone who's a serial killer perhaps or something. I don't know. But yeah, clearly people who watch horror movies are not necessarily, you know, sociopaths, all but sociopaths. But did someone else have their hand up? I see Tracy's still.
Can you see the Zendo hand?
I see the Zendo hand. There we go. I see the Zendo hand, yes.
Is the Zendo hand the right color or blends in? So, yeah. This is Nicholas.
Hi, Nicholas.
Hi. I think Tracy brings up a good point. This kind of acceptance of human nature in some senses of we're going to steal. I think the precepts all point out these things that humans have a tendency to do that we're not very proud of. And I think everyone does steal, right, is true, because I mean, I think we forget about the times when we want something a certain way, when we desire an outcome or an event or something that we find we're stealing the space from others when we're disappointed by this. We steal time and energy from people when we use our emotions to punish others for the things that we've desired. And I think that theft is unavoidable because we will continue to be imperfect. But it's also like the precepts are aspirations, correct? It's about what we want, not a stringent commandment, as you were saying.
That's right. Not a law. But if you resolve to follow the precepts, you know, you're committing to that, despite the fact that no one's going to come and arrest you. I mean, they might arrest you if you're stealing Bibles from a bookstore, but yeah, something else. Okay, Tyler?
Yeah, I just, as I probably said too many times, I run a preschool for a living, so I deal with theft a lot. There's a lot of, like, probably 80% of what I do is dealing with the fallout of someone taking something of someone else's. But yes, you've all steal. Well, you've all stolen. Like, there's just no, there's no doubt about it. But really, what even at that age with those kids, that what the conversation really always comes down to is like the wanting. Almost always, it's wanting something that someone else has, not even necessarily caring much about that thing in any like real tangible sense. But I don't think that. They're really clear about it. They're like, I want that thing because they have it and I want it. But I feel like that's still when we think about theft today, or not even like, even like the urge to like, to do that, whether you follow through with it or not, the feeling of wanting something that you don't have, simply usually and often not, it's because it's some symbol of something that someone else has, or, you know, when you really break down to why we have these feelings towards theft, or why we might want something that isn't ours. So yeah, I guess even with the kids, we really get into some of those kind of basic conversations with them about having to wait for things we want or anything like that, which I think is still, we deal with these as adults, whether we actually act on stealing it now or not.
Yeah, it sort of is like a developmental concept there, but you know, some people really do hang on to that, you know, child, when you're in preschool and you just have to have that toy that someone else has, you know, I think that you're willing to do anything to get it. Sort of, it can stay with you longer or into your adulthood if you're so attached to attaining. Mick?
Yeah. So I took my like weird brain took this in like a almost even like a definition kind of a space where like, to to steal something implies that ownership is like a thing. Like people own stuff. I own stuff, you own stuff. And if I take stuff that you own and make it something I own, that's stealing. And I've really thought like a lot about like what it means to own stuff. And like, I'll give a simple example. Like I could go to the grocery store and like buy a pound of chicken breast, but like that was a living being that is not alive anymore. Like, does that mean that I own it because I gave my grocery store like $7 for that? And now I can eat it. Like, I think that like, to the way that I work with this precept is I think about like, what does it mean for something to be mine? Like, because I think particularly in like, in like a capitalist society, our society operates off of owning stuff. And it just sort of becomes this default mode of like, I own this house, but like, it's made of wood that came from trees that lived 100 years ago. Like, how do I own any of that? And I think like we have a real casual notion of ownership of things that often extends into realms where it should not. Like you own people or, you know, whatever else. And I think that's the way that I find this precept really engaging, is to think about like, what are things that I own or that other people own? And I really don't know any of the answers to that.
Yeah. I think about like owning a pet too. It's kind of part of that. Like, you know, like, can you really own another being? Certainly they rely on you for their needs, but yeah. Ownership. So that's a ownership as like a human need. And if you don't have the means to get what you want, how far are you willing to go? How far are people willing to go based on their like moral construct to attain it? Who's next? Tyler?
Or Betty? Yeah, I know I just spoke, so I'll be really quick. I don't want to steal too much time here, so to speak. But just the what Mick was just saying, really the ownership of things, but then like the idea of when you think of like ownership over something, like over like, do people have ownership over this community, over this sangha? And like, then how does that work in a positive sense? And then also, how does that work? How could that work for us in a more challenging sense when we have ownership over a community? Because again, it's not ours, right? Just like that, you can't own a decaying chicken breast or something like that for too long or anything like that. Anyway, but we do. And so we have all these different notions of ownership, and Mick just made me think of that one.
I'll just say quite quickly, there's a great Ursula Le Guin novel called The Dispossessed that will really, I think, drive home some of the questions that was the root of all of my questions about like ownership. It's called The Dispossessed. It's wonderful.
Yep. Betty?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for staying up so late too, Ellen, to do this. Yay. So the conversations that we're having are just really evocative, you know, bringing up a lot of stuff and my own reflections about my actions and bad deeds in the past, but also the benefits that I reap now as a result of systemic stealing that has gone on in our lives and in our history. Like we live on stolen land. It's all of that. And it just makes me feel like, okay, I need to do some atonement, not just for my own actions, but for the actions of my ancestors as well. Because I certainly benefit from a lot of actions that have been taken, that, you know, as a result of stealing. Anyway, it just sort of brings all that up for me. And you know, when we were talking about ownership, it's been 2 years. It feels like recent, moved into the place that we live now. And I just feel like I'm just really, I don't own this property that we live on. And I just really, like, I don't own this land. I don't own those Douglas trees through which the wind whispers, you know. It's just, it just brings up a lot of stuff for me. So thank you for that. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, this sort of like a legacy of stealing, you know, like American history is just full of stealing. Come to terms with it, I guess. I was also thinking, when someone was talking just now about the idea of like stealing the spotlight, that we use that term, that for people who are attention seeking. And I'm always kind of like noticing who wants to steal the spotlight, or if I have the impulse to make myself known, steal the spotlight. Does anybody else have an example of that? Something not tangible, something like conceptual or an idiom that involves stealing? Stealing time, stealing the spotlight. Yes, Joshua.
Somewhere in the Rosetto reading, it was talking about, like, you know, these sort of attention seeking, like backhanded, self-deprecating comments, sort of looking for like a compliment of like, oh no, you weren't terrible. Like, it was actually, you know, you did a great job, or, you know, I was terrible, you know. I was a musician for a lot of years, and that was, I mean, just like every single show was, we'd finish playing and the other musicians would be like, oh man, I did terrible. And I was guilty of it myself sometimes, just looking for just some validation that maybe I wanted to manipulate the situation to get somebody to sort of, you know, soothe whatever vulnerability I was having at the moment, or, you know, just looking for some sort of, compliment or something like that. I was just also thinking, like, all the precepts are just so interrelated. Like, this could be applied to, you know, using anger to manipulate a situation to sort of get what you want, or using sexuality to manipulate a situation to get what you want. That's sort of what came to mind for me.
Alice?
Hi, I think there's a lot of importance on the second half of that precept about honor the gift not yet given. A lot of times we've had these situations where someone would offer a helping hand at a time of need, or they would offer even a smile or even a compliment, or just, you know, a windfall or anything that's kind of random and given to you. And we have to be appreciative of those times. On the flip side, if you're not appreciative of those times, then you end up feeling like everything, you deserve it, you know, and so therefore you steal it, which is, you know, the opposite of appreciating things that are not yet given to you, I guess. So it's kind of like two sides of the coin there.
Like, definitely related to gratitude and generosity. And I mean, again, like what Tyler was saying, like, kids steal, you know, they take each other's stuff. And then at some point, I guess, you know, in our development, we learn not to do that, we hope, and instead to maybe be grateful for what we do have, and that maybe it's better to give than to take a lot of the time. Was anybody ever dared as a kid to steal something from a store? Like, did you ever have a friend who said, "Oh, go in there and steal that"? I had a friend, and I didn't do it, but I had a friend who, from our local, like, sort of five and dime, she was in the habit of stealing, like, lip gloss. And I remember it, you know, like, the sort of the thrill she got from that. She thought it was a cool thing to do when we were 10 or so. Yeah. Okay, someone then? Dawn. Okay. Hi.
Hi, I'm Erica.
Erica.
Hi. So I know we've been talking a lot about stealing and how our actions affect other people, but I wonder too if it's possible that we steal from ourselves as well. You know, like what Joshua was saying, like, oh, I did terrible there. Like, if we're really hard on ourselves, I feel like we're stealing something from ourselves. We're stealing some level of appreciation, or, you know, we skip a meal and, you know, we're stealing nourishment from ourselves. Like, I feel like it's really important to look at how we steal from other people, but at least for me, I have to look at how I steal from myself as well. So that's all.
Yes. Yeah, I own a business. I have that thought too about stealing from myself. You know, where's the line between me and my business? If I take home a book, if I take home some printer paper, am I stealing from me?
I actually have one more thing. I kind of wanted the conversation to head this way. And I wanted to talk about what it means to have something be freely given. I think it's pretty simple. You know, if someone walks up to you with hands open and offers you something, that's freely given, sure. Maybe not even, but, you know, how do you look at a fruit on a tree and ask yourself, is that freely given? That's what I wonder about this precept a bit, is how do you determine what's freely given when there is no physical entity with hands open? You know what I mean? And I don't necessarily need the conversation to go this way, but maybe people could think about this. If you see me again, tell me what you've thought about it.
That occurs to me with like land use too. You know, I have a friend who's like, he's an author and he walked across the pipeline and walked across America, you know, and he was, the thing that kind of shocked him, now he lives in Scotland, but as if he would even set foot on some people's property, they would come at him with guns in parts of this land of ours. And, you know, like as if he was stealing something from them by, you know, walking across a corner of their property. And then, you know, also there are parts of the country where you can, the land, it's, you know, Bureau of Land Management, whatever it is, you know, you can stay there for free. So, yeah, property is a big item. People protect their, they have fiercely. Yeah. Any other ideas about like about that? I like that. What is freely given? Is there another example of something that is freely given that occurs to you? Zach?
I think both of those kind of go together. And sorry, my camera doesn't work on this computer. The question about freely given kind of goes back to, or like if it's a fruit on a tree, for example, goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, do I need it or do I desire it? are you picking that fruit off that tree because it just looks appetizing and you want to try it? Or are you hungry, like literally hungry, and you need food to survive? And the same thing goes for in the opposite direction for, you know, you supposedly own a piece of land. Are you freely giving of that to other people who, you know, that person needs to walk across there to get to where they're going? Why are you so fearful of letting them do it or anything like that?
Yeah, why are people fearful of letting others walk across their land? I've been wondering that too. We have a trail nearby that goes like, they rerouted it so it goes through a portion of someone's yard, and the person like happily let that happen. So now they've got people walking through like the back of their yard because it made sense for the trail people to do it that way. So, I mean, that seems like freely given, a good example of someone being kind of kind about it. Okay, somebody, yep.
Yeah, there's somebody in the Zendo, but I also noticed Ruth Ann.
Oh, was Ruth Ann? Was Ruth Ann talking? Okay, yeah, I saw her light up too.
You have something, Ruth Ann?
Yes, I think a gift has receiver, a giver, and then I see it with the wider community benefiting. So I've always found that little phrase very comforting. So not to question things to the point of, to me, analyzing of saying, well, what space were they in mentally when they were offering? And it could be a kindness we're not even expecting, kind of out of the blue, where perhaps even a total stranger helps you out with the directions or something very simple, not monetary. And all of these discussions are very, very deep, very rich. And earlier, I'm glad you mentioned the difference between want and need, because, of course, we like to impress that upon children when they're young and teenagers to question. But I know as an adult, I can rationalize something that I don't need. But and that's a trap I can allow myself. So, but I think to just sit for me with the gift not yet given. I mean, it's there. There are always there gifts around the corner through nature and through even other human beings. So I like that allowance of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, back to Doan. Somebody's up.
Right. Just talk.
Yeah.
I'm Judith, and I want to speak for the ranchers. I'm a rancher.
Thank you for that. Yes, thank you.
Yes. I'm a rancher's daughter. And so I agree that we swarmed onto this land from Europe, those of us who are from Europe, and took it over. So I understand that. In the meantime, the people who did take it over and sectioned off parts for themselves are, a culture has grown up. And yes, you do see people come out with a gun if you show up on their land uninvited. And the problem historically, information passed from father to son to daughter, is that many people who come on your land don't lock the gate after them. And things happen. Things get stolen. Things get walked on and becomes a problem. So I guess the human solution has been to appear with a shotgun and let people know. There are signs posted, but hunters will just completely ignore them and come right over and shoot your cow or something. All right. So that's why ranchers behave that way.
I think maybe there's a joke about the gateway to enlightenment standing open wide here. I don't I'm not going to go there, but it's somewhere.
And cows too. Yes. Are we out of time? Are we good? Oh, we have time for one more. Or are we?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Betty. I think Betty has one.
Just real quick. I appreciate the perspective of the farmer, and I feel the rancher. And I think that part of that responsibility about having owning, or at least being a steward of that land that we occupy, is important one to consider. That, you know, I am on this land, and I feel like it's my responsibility to protect it and to be a good steward of the land that I own. So I appreciate that perspective, and I also think that the point about you know, how do we know if something is being freely given is a really important one. And I think sometimes we just have to act on faith that if somebody's offering me something, or if something's available, if it's not harmful for me to take it, if it's not taking it from somebody else, maybe I have to just accept that is being freely given and not resist it. That was a good point in the book that she made, that sometimes people will offer things freely, and that we push it away, that we don't take it, resist it, like advice, for example. Anyway, thank you for this.
Oh, I had something too. It's a little far out in terms of the whole taking what is not freely given, but I guess I think in terms of it's okay to move towards something that we want. That we want to have happen or whatever. But at what point does it become stealing? And I guess I feel like I've learned to recognize in myself when I'm pushing a situation, and I recognize that I'm really pushing. Instead of just moving forward and kind of seeing what happens and seeing what unfolds, that I am, and then usually, like, you know, I run into resistance, people around me aren't ready, and I'm like, come on. But then I recognize, for me, that's what I think of as, it's obviously not stealing something physical, but it's like people were talking about, there's something that I want, and what am I going to do in order to get it? How many rules am I going to break? How many boundaries am I going to push? How many people am I going to piss off in order to get this thing? So, anyway, all right. You have any closing thoughts, Ellen, before the closing verse?
Yeah. The only thing I was thinking of is that, the thing that I think, it's Reb Anderson who gives the example, you know, the classic Jean Valjean example, or the classic, you know, mother stealing medicine for her child. And those are the ones that we sort of let go, you know, the Robin Hood stealing for the greater good kind of thing. So we didn't go there with the conversation, but that was on my mind too.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ellen.
We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Parinita. Enjoy Betty by time, Ellen. Mm.
Night,
everyone.
Thanks so much.
Good night.